PMG, yes. Are you with the Parliamentary?
The Centre for Environmental Ethics.
Ah.
Do they hand that out, or?
No, no, we are providing.
Oh, no, you guys
the,
do that.
Yeah.
No, just come into the Secretary and hand out.
No, no, not yet.
Thank you. Thank you. Presiding over the graduation ceremony Paco Mahat for Health Science University, where she is a chancellor of the institution. So the minister will be able to come. There is an apology also of the deputy minister. It's here, the apology, so the secretary has misplaced it. But she too will not be able to attend the DM. And again, there's also an apology from the DG, who's still abroad. So those are the only apologies we have. Now, I've got a schedule here of how we are going to proceed to get the responses. Firstly, there's going to be Ms. Fisher, D. Fisher, who will talk to the theme on environmental, integrated environmental management and provisions. And then the next one will be Mr. Susi Soshawalana, who's going to talk to the one environmental system. And then Mr. Mark Gordon is going to speak to the Waste Act. And then Dr. Tuli Kumalo will speak to the air quality management. And Mr. Shoni will speak to Biodiversity Act. And then Mark Jardine will speak to the compliance and enforcement. So basically this is the how we are going to proceed today. If there is nothing, can I ask Ms. Fisher to then take us through the responses of the department on the integrated environmental management and financial approach.
So it is not proposed. The amendment currently before Parliament have redefined the mining area, and they've removed the or they've clarified that the portion relates to mining infrastructure.
Can I just interject a bit? I think we're going to miss each other now, because I'm not sure about the structure of the response. I saw that like you normally do, like you did when processing the MSPD. You put in a comment that you receive from the public and the responses. Now, you want to have
check,
because you see, we are going to be lost in the process if we don't identify the specific comment which was made and how we respond, how the department is responding to it, so that we can then understand, because we don't have the document with us. So I thought, my attention has been brought to this big money, which I think the members must also utilize. Okay, you can come in.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members. Chair, in the order of presentation document that you talked to now, Chair, there's a cross-reference in that document. The middle column talks to page numbers in the comments and response table. The difficulty, Chair, is over, I think it's 200 pages, so if we thought we'd try and summarize it in the presentation, so we don't have to go through all 200 pages of every comment and every response, Chair. So the slides that we're presenting tend to actually consolidate those comments into a shortened presentation. And you can see that the shortened presentation here for the first part is already 30 odd slides here. So we look to your guidance on how we proceed then, Chair.
Okay, I think I didn't see that it should be helpful. But then when you then take us through, you just make reference, for instance, this specific issue was raised by the Chamber of Mines. That's it. Okay, this is the comment made by the Chamber of Mines, and this is how we then are responding to that. So the Chamber of Mines wanted the amendment on the definition, and then talk to the comments, so that we're able to follow them.
Excluded was any beneficiation or anything that wasn't a specific mining activity. And then I was just saying that in 2000, so the MPRD amendment that is with the parliament at the moment, it clarifies that what they meant was that it would be mining infrastructure, which means that if the MPRD did come into, if that amendment was accepted, we could amend the definitions, but that is not yet accepted, so we cannot change it at this point. At this point, it still talks to the any infrastructure, which means that it could be linked by a road. The next one is also Clause 1, Section 1. It was also the Chamber. They ask for the definition of financial provision. They submit that instead of a financial provision used in the definition, we use bank guarantee. In the financial provision, we use the bank guarantee as a vehicle to provide the financial provision. They ask if we can have it as a, instead of a financial guarantee, we had it as a bank guarantee, and they said it should, could it be a financial guarantee, and we agree if that proposal can be accepted. It is not intended that it is only a bank that can give that guarantee, so that could be accepted. Clause 1, Section 1, also the definition. It was raised by the Chamber. It was also raised by the Western Cape. The Chamber wanted to remove latent. They were happy that latent was removed. The Western Cape was not happy that latent was removed, and nor was the council or the CRA for environmental rights. We don't want to remove latent. We removed latent because we had a we had a different reading of latent. We used what was in the MPRD, which could have been identified as including an act of God. Now this was a this was intended to have a provision. You make a provision for these latent defects, and something that you don't know about and can't know about, we couldn't make that definition. So what we wanted to do is to retain latent and to have the dictionary definition, which talks to existing but not yet developed or manifest, hidden or concealed. So it absolutely could manifest, that impact could manifest, but it just hasn't yet manifested itself. So we are proposing that latent is retained. We're also proposing that mitigate and remediate is retained. The Chamber was wanting mitigate and remediate to be removed, and the reason why we would prefer mitigate and remediate to be included is it's intended, the financial provision is intended to reduce risk over time and then to repair the remaining impact. So mitigate is to mitigate and reduce, and remediate is to repair. And both of those were concepts that we wanted to retain in the financial provision. Clause 4E, Section 24C12 of the Act, it talks to simultaneous applications. So when you submit your application for a mining application, you also need to submit your EA application, your environmental authorization application. There were two comments asking that we should not only have it as the mining application and the environmental authorization, but it should be all authorizations that you require. We agree that proposal could be accepted. It would facilitate a simultaneous submission of all applications. Clause 7.
You know, I suggest that maybe we deal with the definition, but I need our questions. We ask the members to give us questions. If we are satisfied, then we'll move to the next one. I think that will, so that by the time we finish with the responses and then we are done with the discussion. So the definitions, any comments, any questions? None. The latent, well, you don't have to ask, it's not compulsory to ask a question. Yes, believe it. But you want to ask something?
Yes. Not with a specific definition, but I just want to check what might have happened between the time that these comments were raised and now. I remember in one meeting, our view was that, or let's say in both meetings when everybody was invited, they raised the issues on some of the questions that the government responded there and there. On some of them, we gave you some time to go and work on the issues, on the responses that you are responding to them. But on other issues, we as well advised that we needed to try and find each other with those who were raising these comments. All I'm raising here is where there are no longer issues, for instance, if they were able to find each other, whether with the Chamber of Mines, civil rights, Center for Rights, Civil Rights, or whatever structure that might have raised those issues. Perhaps if we were to be notified to say on this one, Lentet, we have now clarified it between ourselves, we have now agreed, or there are still issues, whatever, so that we know whether we still need ourselves here to say this is the most correct definition or whatever amendment that we may want to do. I'm just interested, it was good assistance to clear those issues that are clear now, right? There are no longer issues, if there are. And if there are no such issues, then we will know that almost on every comment, we have to do what we think is correct.
Okay.
Thanks.
The response?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. We can attempt to do that in terms of some of the, where we're in agreement, and he has made reference to some of them where we're saying we are in agreement with a potential change or we're not in agreement. But in some instances, the difficulty is that you have opposing views. For example, what you just talked to now, the Chamber of Mines has a view that things should be removed, whereas CER and ourselves, in that particular instance, feel that it should be left in. So she has mentioned that the Chamber of Mines wanted it removed. CER wants us to retain it. We have the view that we should retain it as well. So
the response is that there's not been interactions.
Not necessarily, there hasn't been an agreement because there's different views.
I'm saying he's asking, there were some instances where the view was that are you not able to meet each other through a meeting. So it looks like the response is that these responses are based on the actual submission, not on the meetings. Okay.
Sure.
No, it's fine. It's not a train smash. If there has not been a meeting, that is the situation of training. So what will happen in case, for instance, I don't remember which are the areas where we said, are you able to meet and discuss? But say, for instance, we get to that point and then the response and we feel that we can have a discussion, we'll make that comment. So don't worry, there's nothing, there's no translation. So we'll do, for instance, clause by clause, go to the definitions and check if there are major issues. If there are not, if we think that there must be a follow-up discussion, for instance, with whoever has submitted those comments, we can also say so. I'm not saying we are going to say so, but that's a possibility that we can explore. But are we able to go through clause by clause? Is it clause or comment by comment or clause by clause? Comment by comment. Yeah, let's go through it and then check if there's any question. We pass, we go to the next one.
That's all, yeah?
Okay.
Just to put it in context here, there has been some engagement. It's not like there hasn't been any engagement, and you can talk to that if you want.
After
our meeting, Chair.
Okay.
But as you can see, it's a 200-page document, the Word document, so the time is very limited from last week to this week for us to engage with everybody, and as you correctly pointed out here, whatever we
look,
need
you
to...
Look, you don't have to justify. If you have engaged, it's fine. If you haven't, we are not going to hold you...
Can you take your instruction that we try
no,
and
no,
get
it's fine.
As
it
far
was
as
an
possible.
Inquiry from the week, and I think the answer is that there's never been, but where there has been, you will indicate. Yeah. So what I'm saying is that when we come to that, we can say we think that we need to have a further discussion, or whatever the case may be. So, okay. Can I check the members? Are we fine with that definition, the first one? Then this latent and mitigate, which can we just get some more clarification on it?
Thank you, Chair. I think from all the definitions or comments that came from the definition, this is the one that is the most difficult for the parties to agree on. In the financial provision regulations, in the meetings we've been having with the industry chamber and industry, the mining industry, we agreed to remove latent because it refers to a definition in the MPRD regulation which talked to latent environmental impact means an environmental impact that may result from a natural event or disaster after closure of the facility issue. So it's really related to something which you couldn't put a price to. When we plan to do financial provision, which is to put a price to a possible latent defect. But an act of God or any disaster, you wouldn't be able to put a price to. So we agreed to remove that definition. But then when the comments came, it was really apparent that we did need to have latent defect or latent impact included because acid mine drainage is a latent impact. And that is only manifest over time. So what we wanted to do was to retain the latent, the definition for latent, but to use the definition from the dictionary, which just talks to you that it hasn't manifested yet. So it is going to manifest, but it just hasn't yet manifested. So we can put a price to the remediation. So that really is the issue on latent. And it comes up several times, and the objective of the financial provision was to make provision for any latent as well as kind of concurrent rehabilitation. So if we feel that if we leave out latent, we leave out quite a significant part of what was intended to be included in the financial position. So we feel it's important to maintain latent, but to change the definition to remove that uncertainty of disasters, which obviously nobody can put finances to because it's not a known factor. And I think the same is with the others, mitigate, remediate, and residual. So the chamber was concerned that these things are not definable and that they were concerned that they were going to have to make provision for things that they couldn't anticipate. But we believe with the dictionary definition of mitigate, remediate, and residual, that it is totally possible and necessary to make provision for those impacts.
Any comment?
Fine.
Okay, let's move.
Okay, so those were the definitions. And then we'll go on to the clause 4E, section 24C12 of NEMA. It talks to the simultaneous application. That is just the application. It talks now that it currently refers to environmental authorization required for mineral and petroleum activities. But the request is that it should refer to all environmental authorizations, not only the ones that are...
So where are we on the six documents?
So we agree with that proposal because we feel that it will provide clarity and it will get the authorizations to be submitted together, which will reduce time frame of staggered applications. Clause 7, section 340 of chamber. It was also very exciting for environmental rights. And it relates to consultation with the state through the EIA process. They request that we added that the consultation with the state could be done by the state department or an environmental assessment practitioner. We included the environmental assessment practitioner because that is currently the process that is followed. The environmental practitioner currently undertakes a public consultation, which includes the state-owned entity. So the inclusion of the environmental assessment practitioner was just merely to allow for that procedure to be allowed in law. Another reason why we think it should be there is that government should not need to consult on processes or commercial activities on behalf of developers. There's approximately 1,760 EIA applications assessed annually, and it would be impractical for government to undertake consultation processes for all of those services. Additionally, if the consultant process could slip into the consultation process that the environmental or the assessment practitioner does with interested affected parties, and government had to do one with government, it would increase time frames because those two processes would need to come together, and it would actually exceed the time frames that have been allowed for the 300 days for authorization. And then the removal of 2A was just a consequential amendment to that. So I'll move then to clause 6, section 24N. The Chamber would like to retain the detail of the content of the Environmental Management Program report in the Act. We don't think that this is necessary. The EIA regulations have an annex, that's Annex 4, which has the content of the Environmental Management Program report in it, and it provides all the detail that is necessary. So we want to work with the principle that the Act provides the enabling provision, and the detail is provided in the EIA regulations. The Center for Environmental Rights supports the removal of the detail in the Act, and we would prefer to remove the detail. Clause 8, Section 24P, throughout the Chamber is suggesting that the word "or" falls away, but that is related to the primary processing, so if we had to remove the primary processing, the "or" would fall away, but our recommendation is that primary processing should remain and therefore the "or" should remain. Clause 8, Section 24P.
Primary processing. And I suppose this one,
The primary processing was the definition that we spoke about first, which was that we introduced the definition of primary processing to ensure that DMR didn't become the competent authority for activities that were not intended for DMR to be the competent authority of. So it's just a consequential thing that they included that if we remove the primary processing, we would need to remove the "or" as well, but we are proposing to retain the primary processing. Clause 8, Section 24P, the financial provision is to address the final closure measures of residual post-closure impacts. Therefore, the Chamber wants to release progressive rehabilitation throughout, as the funding for progressive rehabilitation is accounted for in the operational budget. So the way that the financial provision works is that there are three plans. So there's an annual rehabilitation plan, a rehabilitation plan to the end of the life of the mine, and then a latent plan which is based on a risk. So because the first plan is supposed to be funded from the company's ongoing balance sheet, from their operational balance sheet, the Chamber wanted us to remove progressive rehabilitation. However, the Department feels that the objectives of the Act is to ensure that environmental protection and progressive rehabilitation of impacts on the environment from mining operations and progressive rehabilitation supports the protection of the environment through risk reduction. Continuously doing
rehabilitation that is done in part of the ongoing maintenance.
To us, that is the progressive rehabilitation. So that's the rehabilitation that you do as you are progressing in your mining activities. That's your progressive rehabilitation. And then obviously your latent and your closure comes as post-closure and latent. So the chamber wants us to remove the terminology progressive from the act. Because they're saying that that is coming from their operational budget. But we believe that it's a concept that should not be removed from the act. Progressive rehabilitation reduces risk. And we in fact want to make it obligatory to do the progressive rehabilitation that is able to be done.
The point is, what is the effect of it being in the act? Does it mean that there must be provision? What is the difference? What is the effect of keeping progressive rehabilitation? Does it have any financial implications other than the concept of them doing it on a
regular basis? It doesn't have financial implications because progressive your annual rehabilitation is done. But we shouldn't confuse the term annual and progressive. Progressive is more as you say, a concept, whereas your annual rehabilitation is done according to an annual plan. But if we lose the concept of progressive, it removes the whole idea of progressive rehabilitation. So
I agree with the progressive that it must be there, but I'm just trying to get the thinking of the Chamber of Mines. What impact would it have to have this progressive? Because all of us who agree they must do it on a progressive so that by the time the mine closes, the task of rehabilitating the mine is lesser than while you don't do anything, you are waiting for the mine to close. So this is the concept of progressive, which we agree with. But I'm trying to understand why would the mind have an objection to such a progressive concept called progressive. I'm trying to think. I don't know whether I'm right. I'm asking the right person, but
I think the mind is concerned with including progressive. Is they using a very literal understanding of progressive to equal annual. So they're saying that they don't need to make provision for their annual through the financial provision. So therefore they don't see why they should have progressive here. But they're not seeing the progressive as a concept. They've seen it, and I'm speaking of my opinion of what they're saying, but they're equating progressive to annual. And we are not equating progressive to annual. Progressive is more the concept.
Honourable Pena?
This last slide, you just told us that it is proposed that it's retained. Slide B, the terminal will be removed. Is there a mistake there, or have I misread something? Very last sentence. Because of this terminal be removed, but you told us you can. Am I correct? That's quite important.
Yeah. Honourable Pedin is very vigilant. Careful. Yeah.
And the only reason I'm trying to guess is mine. The progressive rights to them have mean financially.
It might be their interpretation, but if it's properly clarified that as you mine, you must rehabilitate when you are done mining on a progressive basis, and don't do it at the end of the life of the term of the mine, which is what I think is the intention. So I think it's fine.
Apologies for that error, we will carry.
distinct recorded, so
you see, they are understanding the equal that to Aymar, meaning that when they budget for it, they don't have to budget for it Aymar. I may not understand how they operate, whether they've got annual budget. And when you say progressive, meaning that you don't want to equal that to annual, it means they can do that even after a year, or whatever they think of doing, or in 6 months. Or, because I'm not sure whether that would mean monthly or new, but progressive, anyone can hide within that, unless it's there are specific time frames in terms of what progressive means as opposed to annual.
Thank you, Chair. That's a very insightful comment. But the term progressive basically is linked to the regulations, and the regulations speak to precisely what Honourable Mark Vela is talking to, where there's provision made for the annual rehabilitation. So as you said, there has to be an annual rehabilitation which is planned for in the annual operation. So at the end of that year, they'll make money available to rehabilitate some of it. And then at the end of the closure of the mine, there's another provision for the closure of the mine. And then what we want, or what we do have, is that the issue around maintenance after the mine has been closed, and we need to do rehabilitation or rehabilitation, we must find a provision for that as well. So what you're talking about, Honourable, is contained in the regulations itself. So there is provision for that in the regulations for the handbook. So,
okay. Yeah, remember, it's possible that the Chamber of Mines may not want this progressive to be in the act, so that the whole concept of doing it on an ongoing basis is then disappears in the process. So as long as the understanding is that the financial provisions, because if this proposed amendment is something that amends the provisions around financial provisions. Is that true? Yeah, I think it's fine. Let's just proceed. Let's not crack our head on something that is just clear and straightforward.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, we're going to put a section 23. The Chamber submits that the intention of the word mitigate is superfluous, and mitigate is conceptually included in rehabilitation and remediation. So the dictionary definition of mitigate is to alleviate, to and to reduce. The word for remediate is so the intention of the act is to do both. So diminish over time, then repair. So diminish the risk over time and then do repair. And therefore it's not intended that the two concepts should be removed. So they're trying to say that or their idea is that mitigate includes both of those concepts, and we believe that they should be specifically separated. Clause 8, 24p, the Chamber proposes the insertion of the words remediation and management of residual impacts as identified in the environmental risk report. So the new words are the environmental risk report throughout. And then after the newly inserted word, post-closure to bring the word in line with 2017 draft financial provision regulation. So it is not the intention to introduce terms like risk assessment report to the Act. And this could change. It's only a methodology to determine your financial provision. So it could change over time. So we shouldn't bring in terms that would be restrictive in the future. So, sorry, I'm just going to, yeah.
So we don't propose that we change it, and the regulations will be considered to ensure that there's no meaning lost, but also that there's no unnecessary details in the Act. So really the crux of it is that they wanted us to introduce this environmental risk report, but we are not keen to do that because there's only one method. It is not the method and the only method. So that's the comment there. Clause 8, section 24P1A, the reference to annually comply seems to be unnecessary. This is also from the Chamber. As the obligation is to comply at all times and to do an annual assess and update the requirements for the financial provision, we agree that there is duplication and the reference of annual compliance could be deleted. Clause 8, section 24P1A.
So all these changes are in the revised.
Sure, we haven't done the changes yet because it really is too committed to decide how to change.
Okay.
So we're just proposing.
So after this discussion, you then. Okay. All right.
Clause 8, section 24PA, the words possible to undertake could alternatively be replaced by required to be undertaken in terms of the annual rehabilitation plan. So this is also the Chamber. So we've got currently in the Act, we're saying that you must do the remediation that is possible to be undertaken. And the Chamber is wanting to restrict that rehabilitation to what is identified in the plan. The wording could be considered. We believe that the wording could be considered to see if it could add value. The principle, however, should be clear that the rehabilitation that is done should not be delayed and it should be undertaken. But we could consider the rehabilitation that has been identified in the closure plan in some instances, as so as not to make it too open and to actually refer to the stuff that was in the plan. That didn't have unintended consequences. Clause 8, section 24P2. The existing 24P, the failure to rehabilitate or manage any impact should be specifically linked to an environmental management program contemplated in section 24QN. So, again, this is from the Chamber. Again, the Chamber seems to have a desire to limit themselves to the rehabilitation in the rehabilitation plan. It is proposed that this could be considered. However, we also do need to consider if there would be any implication. But at this point, because it's referring to specific plans, it could actually have that reference to that plan.
So what are the possible implications?
Well, the possible implications is that we wouldn't want to use that concept of provision release. So I think we need to just do the test to see if it has an implication on the progressive rehabilitation concept. And if it has, then obviously we would not want to accept it, but we don't think it will have because it actually refers to specific portions of the financial provision population.
Okay. So what do you want us to do?
We can propose to change as they
okay. But
again once the writing is actually dropped, once the drafting is done, we should just check that it doesn't lose anything that we didn't agree.
Okay.
24.8, thank you very much. The same applies to section 8, section 24P. I think you need to give us the proposed reading. Because you said that whoever the reading in the 2017 FP regulation be considered and to ensure that there is no meaning lost, but there is not the unnecessary detail in it. I think we need to ask
look at the comments and the responses to the comments. Remember, when we do the clause by clause, then we will actually look at what the David referred to, the actual word, and then we have to decide on that wording once we do the clause by clause analysis.
Not easy to propose on the comments. We are still going to do it after.
Well, Chair, that was our understanding of how you wanted us to do it, Chair. Remember that the next session is scheduled for the close by close analysis. So this was basically to look at the comments that we received.
But remember that close by close will not have the benefit of this detailed comments. So,
well, we can probably link it back to what we're presenting now when we do the close by close.
Or when we do the close by close, we have to refer to.
To
the, okay. It will be better so that we don't lose
the context.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Just continuing then, clause 8, section 24C1A, the reference to. Clause 8, 24C3, the requirement for the holder or the holder of the environmental authorization. Aligned to regulation 12.4 of the financial commission regulation, and the request from the chamber is that we align the regulations and the act. This misalignment is known, so this is the department's response. We know that there's misalignment. However, the regulations are being drafted without the enabling provision in NEMA. So we can't put a 3-year time frame in the regulation when NEMA says a 1-year. We have to comply with NEMA. So until NEMA has been amended, we cannot do what they've asked. But the intention would be, obviously, if the amendment is made in NEMA, that the amendment would consequently be made in the regulation. And that is the agreement. And
so we can have the 3-year thing.
It will go. Clause 8, section 24.4. It would be preferable for the word independent assessor or reviewer to only refer to an independent assessor, as contemplated in the 2015 financial provision and 2017 draft financial provision. So section 24P3 only refers to the assessment, not the review. Because of this, the introduction of the reference to the review is not clear in full. It may, however, be necessary to include the review in 24P3. So I think what we're saying is that in 24P we don't need it because it's correct that we're only talking about we're not talking to the review, but we will need it in 24P3. We will need the review because we are actually talking about the review. So that's what we're proposing there. So we can accept their comments in the first part, but just need to retain it in the second part. Clause 8, section 24P5, the chamber takes note of the reference to latent impact, has now been removed. I think, Chair, we've had that discussion. We want to retain latent and for the reasons that we indicated. And that will be a discussion with the chamber. I don't think they're going to be happy with the inclusion of that, because in our discussions previously we have indicated that they can be removed, but it would strengthen our argument if it was included in NEMA, and that everybody was happy to have it in NEMA, then it would be a consequential change to the regulation.
What is the impact of? So latent was there on the draft, the one that was published for comment, this draft amendment. At what point was it taken out? It was at the time when they were doing the submission, it was not there. Are we reintroducing it after they have commented on it?
The license was always in the Act. But then when we negotiated the draft financial provisioning regulation, during that discussion, because a license was never defined, not in our Act or the regulation, but during the method of the financial provisioning regulations and during our consultation process, we look at license in terms of the EPRDA regulation, which has quite a different meaning to the dictionary meaning. And what we always intended in the Act was to have the dictionary meaning. We haven't defined it as well. So it was always in the Act, and then we proposed it to be removed based on that discussion, but we want to retain license.
No, I understand, but when did you propose for it to be removed? When you were discussing the draft amendments, or at what point? On the published version of the amendment bill, or because when they prepared for their submission, the latent was not the same. I'm just talking to an issue about technicality, because if we reintroduce it now, when at the time when they were making comments it was not there, I think it's going to be unfair, because you then need to engage with them again.
At this stage,
Rebecca,
this bill was introduced in May 2017. And we have subsequently published the financial provision for comments. When we published the draft regulations, we haven't finalized those amendments yet. And when we published it for comments, then the comment was raised by other parties that we can't actually remove license because it has a different meaning from religion. And that is why we want to retain it. Because of that, because you will lose. It will have the unintended consequence that some of the impacts will not be covered by the financial provisions. That should have been covered. That was always intended to be covered. Otherwise, the other option is what the CER proposes, is that you then, or CER also made this comment, that they propose that you then broaden the definition of religion to include latency. That is the other option.
You want to help us?
Okay, I'm advised that my colleague said it wasn't removed in the amendment board, so it's still there, but the way I understand.
So where was it removed?
So I think that it came up in the discussions, Chair, on the regulation. So there was no proposed amendment in the world of the removal in the test.
Yeah. But why would the chamber say they are happy that it has been removed? Because they are aware, I'm sure, they are talking to the bill, not the regulation.
Sure. If you look at the comments that are linking, I think the provisions in EMATU, the discussions on the draft 2017 regulation.
Oh, okay.
We checked the 2017 published NEMA proposed amendment, and there was no proposal to delete license from that. It was only after the publication that the issues came out in discussion. So I think,
but how was latent defined in the original bill?
It wasn't defined.
It was. So you are just proposing definition. That it must be defined as in the dictionary. Okay, so is that the case?
My colleague just reminded me, we have so many discussions. Where you will find it is clause 8 in the law, clause 8, and it's clause 8 E. When we amend section 24P5, and there we it's on page 9 of the bill on top.
Okay, the minister responsible. Where is it?
The minister responsible for mineral resources must retain such a portion of financial provision as may require to rehabilitate the closed mining or prospecting operation in a aspect of license, and then we have removed license. And it was due to the fact that because of our discussions during the amendment of the financial provisioning regulations, but after the regulations were published for comments, we received comments, it in fact said that we must obtain license, because license in NEMA does not have the same meaning as in the NPRCA box. It has the dictionary meaning, which is quite wider and has a total different meaning.
But are you aware what you are saying is different from what she was saying?
Sorry, I was looking at the definition of financial provision where we retained license, and here we have suggested the deletion of it. So I think there was already a misalignment between what we were saying. The definition still retains
They saw what is appearing on page 9, and they are happy with it, that you are proposing deletion. And so, my question is, what is the... what is the legal position now? Because we published this bill, and then they submitted comments on the basis of what we published, and we had an engagement with them. This was not proposed to be retained. So now they are not here, we are on our own, we are discussing. You are coming back to say, let's include it. You want to help us?
Other comments asked for to be so it would have been a discussion of the committee.
Were there other people who argued in those? Who are they? Okay. Do you have their specific comments why they are saying they was not written? I think you confused them with this one. Because it does look like you changed your mind after publishing. Because you are proposing that it must be taken out, and now you proposed that, but now you said no, it mustn't be taken out, it must not be clearly defined.
Yeah, I think that can also be explained. When we took it out, it was actually really based on the discussions that we were having with industry at the time through the financial provision regulations. So it wasn't based on the comments on the financial provision. And the comments on the financial provisions was also asked in some instances for the retention of this. So it really was based on the discussions that we were having with industry and not on the comments that have come genuinely from the public on the financial provisions.
Okay. Now let's proceed. I guess this is one of the areas where you can argue that there must still be some engagement on this one. Just to make sure that we are sort of covered in terms of procedural and substantive input that people have made, to make sure that we are not going to be found to be at fault in the procedure. But I guess there's a lot of lawyers here who would advise us on the end what is done. The explanation makes sense, I must say. But procedurally, but you will advise us.
The reference to other environmental impacts is not a call, but a current enclosure and post-closure rehabilitation and should be deleted. The term environmental impact does not accord with the aforementioned terms, which are similarly used in 2015 and 17 financial provision regulations. We agree. It is proposed that the reference to rehabilitation, we agree if the reference to rehabilitation and residual and latent is included, that any other impacts can be deleted, and that is because they would all have been included anyway in those three definitions. So we could then remove other environmental impacts. Clause 8, 24P5, the Chamber proposes the deletion of the word in perpetuity. The Chamber supports the wording in section 43.6 of the NPRD, which provides for the retention for such a period as the Minister may determine, having regard to circumstances relating to the relevant operations, which portion and period must be determined in a prescribed manner. So what the Chamber is wanting is they're wanting us to limit the time that the latent provision will be made. And however, we don't agree. There is no time frame related to latent defects, as they are just not manifest yet. So it is known that the impacts of asset mine drainage only manifest after a significant number of years, and the funds must be available to DMR to manage those impacts in perpetuity. So whenever those latent defects occur, and it goes back to the fact that we've now defined those latent defects to be things that are likely to occur, and not things that are disasters that we should retain in perpetuity. This is a concept that's coming up a few times now in the comments that come after. Clause 8, section 24P, some mechanism must be provided for the return of the financial provision once it becomes clear that there is no longer residual impact as proposed for INEMA and the NPRD. So here, this is also from the Chamber, so they want it refers back to the fact that they want to limit the time period for the financial provision for latent, and then when that time period has happened, they want a provision for the return of the funds to the mine. So the funds at closure are earmarked for post-closure and latent impacts, which are intended, which are indicated that they could happen. They just not yet manifest, so the risk has been determined using, and the risk of that happening has been determined by the best methods and models and science. So therefore, they are expected, and there should be no return. The department feels that there should be no return of funds to the mine. It should be retained by DMR in perpetuity to ensure that should latent impact at any time be manifest, that DMR can deal with them. Clause 8, section 24P5, the formulation of the retention in perpetuity, irrespective of the circumstance, constitutes an expropriation of money without the meaning of section 24P5 of the Constitution. So what they're saying is basically, if we don't pay them back, if the state doesn't pay them back, it could be unconstitutional. That's what the Chamber is saying. What the department is saying is that latent risks are determined through a risk assessment, and therefore they are expected, although there's no time frame associated with their occurrence. It may well be unconstitutional if funds were not secured by the state, and the state would have to pay for that remediation in the future, taking away funds from other possible uses. So we are not supportive of, firstly, defining a time frame, and secondly, returning the funds to the holder. Clause 8, section 24P5, the concept of cession cannot operate regardless of the guarantee or trust fund, nor is it justified that the guarantee or trust fund should simply, in respect of determining a portion of the financial provision, secured remain in place. So it's going again to the same point, and the department says that the cession of guarantees or trust seems to be able to be done. We have engaged with the industry in terms of guarantees, the insurance companies and the banks, and it seems that cession is possible, cession to DMR is possible. So if they're saying that it's not possible, we'll need to get more clarification on why that wouldn't be possible, because certainly the work that we've done says it would be possible. So, and we would not suggest that
that we should not feed that funding to GMR in perpetuity.
The ceding of the money, the provision that was made by the mine to GMR, is that what the issue is?
The chamber wants that money. They're happy to keep that latent money for a period, but then they want that money to pay, come back to the mine. What we're saying is that that money on that closure certificate should be ceded to GMR so that GMR has that funding to do any remediation of latent impacts that might come at any time. So we don't see anything wrong with seeding, and the work that we've done, it seems that seeding is possible, both as a trust fund as well as an insurance policy. Clause 8, section 24b5. If there is to be seeding or sessions, provision should be made for the investment of the seeded funds for the benefit of the mine, and it would need to be a consequential change to the Income Tax Act to allow for this. In the context of the trust or rehabilitation company, as currently, it is not permissible. So here they're saying that where we want where the money should be seeded, that the investment or the money, the benefit should be going back to the mine. So I'm understanding that to mean any interest and so on should be going back to the mine to allow, and that should also then they're saying that there needs to be a change to the Income Tax Act, which doesn't allow the mine to actually receive that without a penalty now. And what we're saying is that as costs increase over time, any interest from the fund should be accrued to DMR, who would be required to do the rehabilitation in the future. So, and the amendment to the Income Tax Act has been discussed as far as agreed. So at the moment, the Income Tax Act doesn't allow seeding, but we haven't discussed with Treasury and SARS that is, we would make those amendments. And we don't see that the company should get any of the interest, because if the money needs to grow for DMR to be able to fund the rehabilitation in the future as costs increase. So we don't agree with the Chamber view. Clause 8, section 24b5. It also raises the issue as to whether the financial implications do not suggest that such provision needs to be a money bill. So that, and follow the process of the adoption of a money bill. So the department's view is that the matter has not been raised by either Treasury or SARS, and we've engaged with them substantially, but we could pose the question to them and find the answer. However, section 24.5D already makes provision for consultation with the Minister of Finance when regulations are made, which requires the setting of financial or other securities to cover the risk to the state. And the provisions do not establish a fund, nor do they require payment of services. So we don't believe that a money bill is required, but we will still have further discussions and put questions specifically to SARS and Treasury. Clause 8, section 24.5, in terms of section 24R1, the holder remains responsible for liabilities notwithstanding the issuing of closure certificates, and the Chamber believes there needs to be some mechanism where a holder can draw down on the financial provision which has been retained by or ceded to the Minister, and alternatively would need to be amended to provide for the holder's responsibility to cease on the issuing of a closure certificate, leaving the Minister to use the portion of the financial provision. So really what the issue here is that they're saying that if they want to allow a drawdown at post-closure of the funds, and then once that you've got a closure certificate, if you've ceded the funds to DMR, they want the liability to then move to the state and not to the holder. So the department's view is that a drawdown mechanism for funding of closure is being considered in the Financial Provision Act. Regulations. However, for post-closure, the police are always remains responsible for any amount that exceeds that was not set aside, and also in terms of the act, the police is always there. So it's three things we will consider, and we are considering a
we would the holder will always be responsible for any money that exceeds the money that has been ceded to DMR, and the producer or the mine will always be responsible for any kind of residual environmental impact through the Act, which is what saying that the community has.
Contention by the Chamber of Mines that this must be in the money bin. Was it discussed with them?
No, sir, not at this time.
Or you are saying we can follow it up. Okay. And by the way, these funds are being administered by the mines in terms of the current regulation. The mines make provision for as per the regulation. Who is having access to that?
During the operation of the mine, if the mine needs to, if the holder doesn't do the rehabilitation that's required, DMR can access those funds.
Access them where?
They are in a trust or guarantee. So DMR will call on the guarantee or would request the trustees to make the money available.
So in practical terms, how does it work here? Explain to somebody who doesn't understand.
Chair, the theory, I'm not sure that it has been fully practiced, but the theory is that if you're a holder, you have to make provision through either one of two vehicles, the ones that you can pay your money into the account of the DMR, so that is in the hands of the DMR and they can use it at any time. You can establish a trust. That trust is then set up for a specific purpose of rehabilitation of that mine. Or you can take out an insurance product, which they will insure your risk. And if DMR calls on that trust, insurance product, they will pay out to DMR. So those are the three vehicles. You can have one or a combination of those three. So if DMR wanted to access the funding...
So you make provision and put money in the bank. So who has got access to the money? Is it DMR or the mine?
No, at the moment, if you have a trust fund, it is administered by the executive. So DMR would have to, DMR would have to request the trustees to make funds available to DMR. But they couldn't use those funds for anything other than the rehabilitation of the mine.
Yeah.
And in the case of the insurance policy is created in a tripartite, it's with three parties. So it's the holder, it's DMR, and it's the financial institute that provided it. And there's a clause in that insurance policy that says that should DMR call on that insurance, they will pay. Obviously, there's some provisions that say it needs to be reasonable and you need to give reasonable time. But that is the way that it should work in theory.
So the DR does not have any role. Okay. You know, I'm asking this question because not long ago there was a situation where a mine was changing hands from this company to the other one. The mine was called Optima. Was changing hands from Glencore to Tegeta. Now, part of the proceeds which were used to acquire that mine was the rehabilitation fund, as per the public protector's report. Now, I want to, that's why I'm asking this question, because I want to understand the checks and balances. Here is a fund which was meant to rehabilitate this mine. This fund was used to purchase. Access was given, don't know by whom, maybe by DMR or whoever, and then it was used for the wrong purpose. I don't know whether you are aware of that situation. You must be aware. So, what are the guarantees built into the financial provision regulation to stop instances like this?
So, in terms of the trust is set up for the sole purpose of implementing the management plan for that one, and it cannot be used for anything other than that. That is the legal. Set up of the trust. However, when we come to the end of the presentation, we've requested additional provisions. One of those provisions that we've requested is that we make it very clear that a trust fund or a financial provision may only be used for in the Act, in the NEMA Act, that we make it very clear that the trust fund may only be used for the rehabilitation of that mine. So we want to introduce a check and balance in NEMA to make it very clear that it's only it isn't currently there. We asked for additional provisions at the end of the presentation. As we've been going along, as mentioned that this bill came very early, and we were still talking about the financial provision regulations. We were still having the discussions. And from the discussions that we've been having on the financial provision regulations, there's additional things that we need to include, which will strengthen those regulations and strengthen the financial provision and securing the financial provision in general. So we have requested additional provisions.
Okay. So this rehabilitation fund, nobody knows. By the way, DIA does not have any role to play in that.
The thing that sold my thoughts, but I was also wanting to quote the lesson in that situation which happened today. And I was thinking if you can't send in the legislation to ensure that such financial provision more similar look after, like we have this carbon tax, which is a money business process by the trader. Because currently we have a situation where we right now, at that place, there is nobody who has access other than the board of trustees of the mining company to access to the financing. So I don't know. Maybe we should solicit some advice from the CSO advisor how to go about sending this legislation to the place so that we have access as the department to have access to this funding to the rehabilitation of the mine after closure.
Okay. So we'll look at that. The issue is that you can put up this provision and then it can tomorrow be raided again. And there's nothing left to rehabilitate. Not the trust. You said there are three instruments. The other instrument where you put in some investment.
You shouldn't be able to raise the funds for anything other than
the money. But you've already raised
it.
You don't know that the Buddha took the money for the rehabilitation and bought the mine with it.
But what, there's nothing wrong with the law. It's maybe it's the implementation. I mean, the law was clear.
Yeah, yeah, the point is that you must strengthen it. You must look at making sure that you strengthen it. Make it some, put some more stringent sort of measure to avoid it being raided. It can come back again, you know. Who knows? What else may happen in the future? Opa, I thought the week wanted to say something. Okay, proceed.
Thank you. So section 12A, section 24P, as stated in the explanatory memorandum, 12A does not accord with the SLB or the Income Tax Act, which is submitted, contains provisions which are applicable to those in 12A as well. So the Income Tax Act issue is addressed above, so we address the Income Tax Act above. The section issue is a new issue not covered under the NCLD, so it cannot we cannot use the same provisions. However, the section could be considered again in order to ensure that there's consistency. So let me just see what they say. They're saying that we should use the provisions in the NCLD. The cession of funds to the DMR was not in the NCLD, so we can't do that. But we could look again at the wording just to ensure that there's consistency between that we're not inconsistent and we go back as far as possible to the NPRD wording. But the wording would not be able to be the same. Clause 9, section 24R2, it is submitted that the formulation of section 24R2 is preferable to that in clause 8 of the bill, and it should therefore be retained except the word latent should be deleted. I think this is the clause that we were alerted to earlier, Chair, and this is also from the Chamber, and we're saying that it's not intended that the portion of the fund identified and calculated to deal with latent impact be returned, therefore the clause must be deleted. So there's currently a clause which says that I can't remember exactly what it says, but it says that it would be returned, so we're saying that we need to delete that clause. Clause 3, section 24.2 and 5. Special, so I think we've finished now with the Chamber's comments on the financial provision regulations. Now they go to more general environmental matters, so clause 3, section 24.2 and 5. Spatial tools and environmental management instruments, both terms are used in clause 3A and BA and E. And the reference that, so they would prefer that we use the term spatial development tool, not spatial tools. And we agree that we can use the term spatial development tool. However, they also want us to use environmental management instruments, and they want us to define that. And we happen to use the word environmental management instrument, but we don't want to define the instrument, as this could restrict the number of instruments that can be used in the future, and the intention is to be able to use a suite of tools, not just ones that have been identified.
But if you don't define it, what is it going to be? What are you going to say
there? Sure, there are instrument regulations which talk to how any tool becomes an instrument. It talks to the fact that you actually talk to the process, and it talks to the fact that you need to alert people to the fact that you are going to do this tool, and the tool will be used in this way. So people will have a very good understanding right from the beginning of the tool. And the tool is by the nature of the process that you follow, and the presenting of the tool of instruments is actually clear what is actually meant by it. So it's the presenting process really that makes it the tool.
Okay, so for now we can use anything as long as we have it.
And follow a consultation process and also ensure that people know that you're going to use the tool in that way. Now we get back to the financial provision. These are comments from the Centre for Environmental Rights. So pulled when they go to definitions. They go through definition financial provision limits. The definition of financial provision limits the requirement for financial provision to a holder under the NPRD and to applicants for an environmental authorization, and it needs to include the holder of the environmental authorization under NEMA and the holders of EMPRs and EMPs under the NPRD. So here the issue is that currently financial provision only refers to mining. The wording is there to refer to anybody who gets an EA, but the regulation only refers to mining. So the community or the Centre for Environmental Rights, as well as the Western Cape, have asked for us even now to be more open with this. And what we're saying is the provision is made for other applications. However, the regulations only deal with mining in order to learn from the experience before opening up the activities to all. The intention is to open up financial provision to other activities, but it should be through regulation. It can't just be through an open-ended thing. It has major financial implications, and also the process of the financial provision, as we've seen the financial provision regulation, is a very complicated process. And we believe that we should learn from our experience first, and then we could decide later on which other ones should be included and make sure that they are done through regulation so that it's a fair process and the implications are understood. Clause 3, Section 24, 5A. So the Centre for Environmental Rights supports the inclusion or the insertion of subsection 5A and submits that it must specifically include that the registry shall be publicly available. So this is the intention of the the public notification of its instrument, and it is intended to help the public to know what issues have been presented, and so therefore we support including the wording that it should be publicly available, although for us it kind of intuitively is publicly available. There would be no reason for the person to have that registered if it wasn't publicly available, but if it's if we need to find each other, we can certainly include the wording. It will be available publicly. It's intended for developers to know what exceptions there were to the rule, and therefore if you didn't publish it publicly, then you wouldn't serve the purpose for which it was developed. Clause 4, Section 24C11, we submit that it's essential for effective participation of interested and affected parties for them to be aware of all processes being followed for particular development or related activity. We therefore recommend the insertion of a phrase dealing with this at the end of Clause Subsection 11. So really what they're asking for is they want to know what other applications have been submitted with the EA, so what other permits have been requested, and it's already in the many forms and we have no problem to add it if that is necessary. Clause 6, Section 24N, the removal of section dealing with the concept of the EPR. The amendment of Section 24N is supported, provided that Appendix 4 to the EIA regulations is amended. So this is where the Chamber didn't want us to remove the EMPR content from the Act. CER is supporting the removal of the content as long as we don't lose anything, because it is already in Annex 4 of the EIA regulation. So we note it and we'll ensure that nothing is lost, but we do propose to delete the content in the Act. Clause 8, Section 24P1, limiting the obligations to comply with financial provision requirements to prospecting and exploration only. They're saying that that's not rational and it must be an error. It is an error. It isn't intended to just be for prospecting and exploration. It's intended to be for all mining operations. And we will check that we've not made an error there and ensure that we include all the various mining applications. Clause 8, Section 24P, the Centre for Environmental Rights proposed the insertion of a provision authorising the Minister responsible for water to access financial provision in the event that
department read that in principle of allowing the Minister of Water and Sanitation to access funds for water remediation is under consideration. However, it may not be implemented through an internal governance procedure and may not need to be included in law. So what we're discussing with BMR and Water and Sanitation is the possibility of doing an MOU. We're still in those discussions and they need to come back to us and identify what they are more comfortable with.
So what was the deal with this?
Chair, I'm not sure. Because I think we have no concern to include the Minister of Water and Sanitation. And the financial provision could ring fence water aspects, so there could be a sum for water aspects if there needs to be. But I think that the
any comments?
Thank you very much. I think we need something to help, especially with AMD, my opinion. I think we need to empower every as they have proposed, because we have the issue we have to with AMD. So I think we need some.
This question, and I thought I was going to ask it at the end, but it's good that it's coming now. Whether on all aspects that would relate to mineral resources and now water and sanitation and so on, whether you have actually discussed with them, so that we don't pass something ourselves here and we seem to be in silos. Later the year than issue with those. It will be a general comment from ourselves for now. So that even on our part, we may want to know if we need some joint discussion around certain aspects with those portfolio committees just to get what their understanding may need to be on some of the issues. But at an administrative level, whether on this one I heard you saying you are trying to look at what access should happen, whether anything or whatever. We can on our own chair still discuss it, start on the issue and put more attention on it, just to know what we want to do. But now I don't think we want to have a particular formulation. Perhaps we may await your discussions with the water and sanitation. And I'm just saying, at our level with our own colleagues, because we may not want to run with this on our own and finalize everything, only affect us and us alone. Whereas you are in discussions with the others and end up advising us administratively when in fact we may need some political input to come to the matter. And I'm just saying, it's not about this one alone, there have been quite a number. And I thought that I needed not to just interrupt or interject. I was going to ask that at the end, how were the discussions and whether you can update us on what your discussions are. So the general thing is, on this one, I'm not saying whether it should be instant, but obviously there's something that affects water and sanitation and they need funds to do that, and that those funds may not be, they may not have that budget themselves, they must access the money that is there. So that's the way in which they access that money actually. Can somebody help us with the proper formulation? It makes sense to have water and sanitation access financial provision for purposes of rehabilitation. For instance, acid mine drainage is the responsibility of DWS, so they will need to have funds. So it makes sense to have this provision. You don't have a problem with it? Okay. Or do we need to balance it with them, water affairs? Okay. So can we do that, but in the meantime somebody just come up with some formulation on involvement. Obviously we will then finalize after getting feedback of the discussions with TWS. I'm sure they will be happy to access some funds to rehabilitate.
Chair, also usually we have these discussions at an official level, but Honourable Makbela is correct in that we need the political buy-in also in terms of any decisions that we take in relation to other departments as well. So as officials we don't necessarily have to be that political agreement that was talked about as well. Because as you say, there's financial implications for the other departments as well.
No, it doesn't. It's just we're just providing
additional financial.
Well, a means to access the funds, which they will be happy to access if there is a need for them to change. And I don't know what other engagements. Look, I want us to finalize this bill as soon as we can. So if you keep on referring things to consultation, political, we are then referring it to cabinet, basically. That's what we mean. And at this point, I think we can look at it and finalize. I don't want us to further delay this bill. I'm sure we can engage with the minister responsible for the department to ask that she can bounce it with a colleague. But to make it formal now, it will mean that we refer the whole thing back to cabinet. Then we wait again, get it next year. Okay, proceed.
It is suggested that the inclusion of applicants for environmental authorization is preferable as it's in line with phrasing in section 4. The answer is that the applicant becomes a holder and then falls into the scope of this requirement mainly to annually review and for the financial decision. So when the person is applying, they're an applicant, but when they have the environmental authorization, they are a holder, and then all of the things apply. So I think what you're saying here is that it doesn't need to be a mandatory. Clause 8, section 24P3A, environmental liability should be assessed annually, where subsection B prescribes a 3-year. I think we've dealt with this in the comments from the chamber. So we agree we'll review the audit and propose the amendment to the 3-year. Clause 8, section 24P4, we submit that the Act must make provision for each and affected party to initiate inquiries into the accuracy of the assessments of the review. Okay, this is an important point because what they're asking for here is that as the Department of Mineral Resources reviews the acceptability of the calculation of the financial provision, they want it to be open to interested and affected parties. So what the department is saying is that interested and affected parties are consulted in the EIA process where the determination of the financial provision is able to be considered. That is included in the EMPR, which is then updated every 5 years. And it's not the intention of INAPs to be able to review before the approval of the minister responsible for mineral resources. Because this would lead to a long and very protracted process. And in the meantime, the financial provision could be less than what it should be because there's no agreement on how much it should be. So if then the mine forecloses, BMR could not have the correct amount in the financial provision. So because of the fact that it's going to be a very protracted process, every provision probably will be appealed because people will maybe not think that it's enough. So it will be a very long and arduous process, while in fact the financial provision then wouldn't be adequate to those discussions. So it was not the intention to include section 24P5, we propose that illicit activity should be triggered for closure where financial provision is reassessed and any final handover is recalculated. The department's response is that activity is already required for closure, and therefore a closure plan will be included at that time. What we are considering is a drawdown at that point to access the funds for the rehabilitation that needs to occur. Clause A, section 24P5, we are concerned that the responsibility for water resources, this is again the access of the Minister of Water and Sanitation to the funds, and again we say allowing the Minister of Water and Sanitation access is being discussed, and we have already discussed it here. Clause 8, section 24P5, would the financial provision ceded to the Minister be ring-fenced? Would it be capable of identifying and the identification and tied to a specific mine? The financial provision when set aside is already set aside for a particular FPRD mine, so currently we're saying that there's no need to clarify further. Clause 1, section 1, we got comments from the impact, they go back to the definition. We propose the insertion of the definition of mitigate, seeing that South Africa management is built on mitigation hierarchy. I think we've agreed already that we would include, or we would propose the inclusion of the term mitigate as it fits with the latent and mitigate and remediate that we what we want. Clause 1, section 1 propose the insertion of the definition of remedy. There is no definition for the term remedy. It is proposed to consider this request, but the definition of remediation, rehabilitation, and mitigation seems already to cover them. So we think that remedy would already be covered by them, and it's not their chief to include another term. Clause 1, section 1 proposed the insertion of the definition of residual impact. There's no definition for the term residual impact in NEMA. And we're proposing that this request could be considered. Then there's comments that have no clause to them. The EIA regulation in NEMA do not contain any provision authorizing the competent authority to suspend or withdraw an environmental authorization in the event of a holder failing to comply or contravening with the condition of an environmental authorization. In fact, what we have here, in fact, it is covered in section 31N of NEMA. There is provision already for the withdrawal of an environmental authorization. However, our response here was before we saw that, and the response was that to suspend or withdraw an environmental authorization would not really be useful because the project has already commenced. So the activity related to an EIA are generally activities which allow for the planting of activities that have a specific duration, and if the activity has an operational phase, it usually has an emission license like an air or waste license, and the withdrawal wouldn't make sense when the commencement of the listed activity has already been undertaken, but we've since seen that 31N already allows for it. So we would just leave it, and our response would then be amended to just so that it is covered.
The
suspension of the environmental authorization of permit is covered in 31N of NEMA. So we would just change our comment here. Clause 1, section 1, the competent authority for an activity related to national priorities should be reconsidered. Section 24C3 does not, however, allow the Minister or the EC to agree that applications for activities concentrated in 24C2B, i.e. activities related to matters declared as a national priority, can be delegated. So the department, so this is just really is that the competent authority for priorities is the Minister, and then under Section 2B, it can be delegated to an MEC if the Minister wants that. So we don't believe that there's any change required. It's already enabled, so there's no need for an amendment. Clause 4, section 24C3, whilst we do not support the principle of converting the environmental management program to an environmental organization, we support the proposed amendment only if it's critically, if it qualifies. So really here it's about the EMPR and the MPRD equaling an EMPR and an EA under NEMA. And the intention here, so the working paper is saying that they'll support that only if you were illegal, you remain illegal. And I think we all agree to that, and that is currently how things are stated. However, we do think that we can improve on the way that it has been indicated in the Act, and we're proposing that we use the wording of the EIA regulations, which is more clear on the transitional arrangement, but in essence, the principle is accepted and we can improve on the wording, what the word means. Clause 8, section 24P, I think this is also called from the working paper. So that it reads the proposed amendment to section 24P, whereby the holder of environmental authorization for a listed or specified activity for or directly related to prospecting. This is the Aquaforum. Aquaforum do not believe that the minister responsible for mineral resources should be they are not happy about the 1 year turning to 3 years. They think that it should remain 3 years every year. However, the department's view is that stakeholders have deemed it onerous to expect a detailed audit every year, and in order to ensure that justice is done to such an audit once it is done, we are considering the 3 year, which has been supported by two other stakeholders. Clause 8, section 24P, refers to listed and specified activities outside of the mining sphere, as blending, blending facilities, all kinds will be required to have a financial provision. So this is, we've discussed this here, because it's just that as people want to expand the financial provision. And we believe that the definition intends to expand, but that the process of expanding should be by regulation, and those regulations should come a bit later once we've got the financial provision regulations for mining in place. Clause 8, section 24P, who is the reviewer, the role and function of the assessor and the reviewer is to be clarified, and the cost carried by the applicant or holder is that they're saying that the cost must by the applicant or the holding is not fair. So the department's view that details are provided of the relevant in the relevant regulations of who the reviewer should be. If the assessor or the reviewer of the financial provision is not done sufficiently, a review thereof must be undertaken, and it should be done by the holder of the or the person who did that review, and it's in line with the legal case. So we do not accept that we would change that rules. Chair, we now get on to the additional proposed amendments that we want to be discussed in relation to accommodate the financial community legislation. But maybe we should, I don't know if you want to stop there. Okay. So, Chairperson, as I mentioned, we continued with the amendments to the financial provision over a week period now, and it's been in consultation with many stakeholders. And there are additional requirements that have come out of that process which we would like to consider in the NEMRA, which we'll just talk to here. So in section 1, the definition, we would like to retain the word extraction. It was an oversight to remove the word extraction, as this is the trigger that brings mining into the NEMRA. But section 24CB should read the minister responsible for mineral resources must be identified as competent to provide in terms of subsection 1, where the listed or specified activity is or directly related to, and we've removed extraction, so it must be retained, extraction and primary processing of a mineral or petroleum resource. If we remove extraction, it means that the mining activities are not covered, because extraction is defined as mining. Section 1, the definition, and then the definition of financial position. inclusion, there needs to be an inclusion of an old order landholder. It's been determined through the consultations that we've had that there are several old order right holders that are still in existence, and in order to ensure that these old order right holders are brought under the financial inclusion requirements, they must be identified in the definitions of persons who must justify the financial inclusion. Section 1 definitions again, depending on the decision on the discussions between DMR and Treasury, we may need to amend the definition of financial inclusion to include a parent company for oil and gas. As Chair, the oil and gas industry have a specific problem with the financial inclusion regulations. The vehicles in which they can provide the financial inclusion are not suited to the oil and gas industry, where the risks and the investments are very high, and South African banks and insurers are not able to accommodate the risk. So really, a parent company, we think, for example, if Shell was to manage the risk of a production line in South Africa. So at the moment, DMR and Treasury are in discussion around parent company because there's a bit of they're uncertain of the consequences of such an inclusion. So if they do come to the decision that a parent company should be allowed, which will then allow the oil and gas industry to comply more easily, we need to include a parent company in the vehicle that can provide a financial provision. Okay, I'm just continuing. The definition of financial provision is proposed to include a new vehicle, which is also a rehabilitation company. There are currently such companies registered with Treasury, and the Act should allow for them to continue and to fulfill that purpose. So it's just an omission. Section 24P, we need to add a provision that the financial provision can only be used for the rehabilitation and not for other purposes. So this goes back to what we were discussing before, making the financial provision more clear and less able to be eroded. So what we're suggesting that it must be clear that the financial provision can only be used for purposes of rehabilitation. Currently, in order to receive a tax rebate, the Tax Act makes it clear that the funds must be used for mining and rehabilitation solely, and if they're used for anything else, there is a penalty, but it is a tax penalty. So we would like to include in the provision that rehabilitation should be for nothing else other than rehabilitation. Section 49A, offences. We want to add a provision to ensure that it's an offence to use the funds for any other purpose other than rehabilitation. That is just to protect the state and to provide clarity to the industry that the sole purpose is for financial rehabilitation.
Offence, what type of an offence?
It will be a criminal offence if you used your financial position for anything other than So it would be very clear.
So when you say an offence, it means a criminal offence?
Yes, it's criminal.
I was just saying to you, which may address your previous concern around how do we ensure that they use it only for that specific purpose.
Okay. Yeah, I think
remember when you referred to Optima and how they use the funding there. I said when you refer to Optima and how they use the funding, that's the query I'm talking about.
Yeah. I think it might need to be expanded a bit, but at least it does.
Okay, then we need to change the word "seed" as the mining, just in terms of the mining permit cannot exceed it. This is to ensure that the funds set aside for latent defects of the permit can also be transferred to the DMR on sale certificate being issued. So at the moment, the NPRD is quite clear that the mining permit can't be exceeded, so we just need to reword the intention and not use the word seed. In A, we need to delete and retain and replace retain with access. So instead of seed, it should just be access. The one in the one section, in section A, it talks to the fact that the minister must retain. The minister never had the funds, as we indicated to you, that the minister never had the funds to retain in the first place. So we can't use the word retain. We need to use a different word, which is then to access. We're proposing that we use the word access. The section allows the minister or the entity in compliance with the minister to make the financial provision of support to any other activity identified in the Act. I think we've discussed this before. We say that this should be allowed through legislation in terms of the regulations. Any holder of the environmental authorization for mining or directly associated, so apparently the provision covers only the NTRB holder and not the holder of the environmental authorization for mining related activities. So we must be inclusive of all environmental authorizations and not only for mining. Then depending on the decisions between water and DMR regarding the Minister of Water and Sanitation being able to access the funding, there may need to be a need for the Minister of Water and Sanitation to be identified in the Act. Because currently it's just the Minister of Mineral Resources. The provision must be added to allow for the drawdown of financial provision for the purposes of closure and in relation to an improved closure drawdown plan. Chair, this is an important inclusion. At the moment, there is no map for a person who has a trust fund to access funds, those funds. There's no clear drawdown mechanism in the Act or in the NPRD or anywhere. So basically the funds just stay in the trust fund and they cannot be used for the purposes for which they're intended, which is foreclosure. So what we want to introduce is a mechanism to allow for a drawdown, but with certain provisions as the final closure. So the procedure is still under discussion, although the principle is more or less agreed. Only the amount for remediation of latency should be retained by the Department of Mineral Resources. In general, Section 24P does not suit the oil and gas industry. The nature of the industry does not allow annual rehabilitation. It does not require annual review and audit. So it's not possible for oil and gas industry to cease funding to DMR for latency. So a separate dispensation should be included to accommodate the industry and allow for them to comply. So we're just saying that the nature of activities and the scale and the risk does not fit with the current financial provision dispensation. A separate provision should be included to ensure that the oil and gas industry can comply and can be brought under the management of NEMA. So sure, we haven't made any specific recommendations in terms of wording. It's really a principle discussion that is being and then in general, there's a requirement in the final drafting process to ensure that there's consistency, there's a consistent use of terms in 24P of the Act, the definitions and the powers of the minister to make regulations. Currently, there's inconsistency in the terms between these sections and the regulations, and there's a need to ensure that there's also no duplication. And this duplication is difficult to really tame, and we took some things from the NPRD. Now we've got financial provision, so it's just really making sure that once we've done drafting, to ensure that there's no duplication and that the terms are used consistently. And then, thanks, Chair, that's a long story.
Very long. So how do you propose we deal with this last slide? Michelle? What must we do with that?
Well, Chair, I would recommend that we go through the process of the comments and responses, and then when we do the actual clause by clause, we then propose a draft. In that.
I'm talking about the exhibition hour. It must be a draft proposal. How should we have
Chair, it's a bit difficult because the thing is that it hasn't been through the process in terms of what was presented, what went through the classes, what went through cabinet in terms of the bill. So it raises a bit of a conundrum for us because there's also comments, Chair, related to other sections.
We can deal, just interject, we can deal with some of the issues where comments have already been obtained. For instance, that would be part of the public participation process. But where there is completely new stuff, that would be the dilemma. But maybe what you can ask is that you engage the stakeholders on those aspects and then let's get their views and then come back to us with their views on that. Whether there's a strong objection in us including this or whether we don't have strong objection. Because they need to engage. Is that fine?
Yes, we can do that, Chair. But I think because there's other, you'll see when you come to the other sections as well, there's comments that haven't been included in the bulk yet. So it is a bit of a problem in that sense that.
But comments which are coming out of the public.
Correct, Chair.
Yeah.
Which, but like, for example, there's comments related to the member bulk, which. If you remember our previous discussion where we said we'd address it in our interim response, we said we'd address it in the amendment for NEMBA. So now those comments are now made in terms of comments under this process, and we said we'll deal with it in the longer term NEMBA.
I think the NEMBA fee is still coming, we can still deal with it.
Well, I suppose we could share them, it's basically a decision that you'd have to carry.
Because this one has directly impact on this VAT, and there's not going to be another opportunity unless you start with a new process of another amendment. So we just need to be advised properly whether I'm going to experience problems like that issue of the resource agent. But my belief is that all these are comments that are arising from the public hearing. So we can consider them technically because they are part and parcel of the public participation process. So we can consider them in order to enrich the legislation that is before us. But of course I think it's going to be important that there is some engagement with the stakeholders so that we get their inputs before we finalize, especially the class by class aspects. Mark?
Chair, on that point, because the clause by clause, I think, is that they've been next week. Because we also have a similar situation around, you know, engagement around finalizing wording, specifically for the amendment. I think your point is absolutely valid. And those engagements, we've had a few already with the provinces and some of the industry associations. So, yeah, I think we have to, you know, we'll see how we go next week and take it from there.
Because what we could do, we could deal with the clause by clause, and then some of the issues we can then await them until they are properly consulted upon, and then we can then come back to those ones. That is the one option. Because I don't want us to delay everything. At the end of the day, we can process what. You can see it's quite expensive, it's quite involved, and we're just dealing with what. But the financial problem is still a waste. So if we delay everything else, it's going to be a problem. So I suggest these other ones which are sort of new, or they require new formulations or new sections or clauses, let's subject them to the process, but we proceed with the clause by clause. Next speaker. And then this response is so good. Yeah, one of the may have to escape and look at another page. We've just dealt with one, and it's almost for lunch now. Tuesday, Wednesday, we're supposed to do class by class. Now, she's proposing that we remove the two and then finish with the responses. Because quite clearly, we're not going to finish today. And then look at it next week. And then once we are done, we can then give the department a chance then to draft. Finalize the draft and then do clause by clause. And then we can then decide on consultation with stakeholders. I don't know how much consultation you need. It may be a week or two or 3 weeks. Provinces and departments. But who are your key stakeholders? Is it not Chamber of Mines, the Center for Industry, all the stakeholders who are here? Because not everybody made submissions on the financial provisions. So you call those ones who they may likely be affected and then engage with them. So I think we will do that if members don't have a problem. I don't think just a procedural issue to deal with the process.
I'm just checking, that's your proposal.
Well, she's making it to me, you know.
Okay.
Under ordinary circumstances, I'll make a ruling to say, you know, I can't say. But as a Democrat, I'm putting it to the House.
No, I'm just checking what's in charge.
No, no, the deputy can also make comments. But I think it's in order.
If I had you on the chair, the proposal has come in saying Tuesday, Wednesday. And Wednesday is our budget working day.
Is it Wednesday? Mm-hmm. What day is it?
Wednesday. I'm not sure what, but I'm saying if the proposal was saying Tuesday, Wednesday, and I'm saying if it's Tuesday, Wednesday, I wanted to slightly amend the Wednesday, because I don't think we want to sit here.
What's the thing on Wednesday?
Yeah, we can do it Thursday next week. I don't know whether you'll be available. But there is the processing of the getting responses. Tuesday we can also do. Morning. Oh, then the caucuses. Okay, let's do it on Tuesday. If we are not finished, we'll do for another day. Yeah, let's do it on Tuesday. Okay, so we're done. There was this oil
different regime for oil and gas, because the financial commitment as far as oil and gas goes, I think the current instruments don't necessarily cater for those, because you're talking about mega money. I think the risks also are quite substantial in terms of those sectors. I don't know if he wants to add.
Our understanding from the industry is that they are actually, the banks in South Africa are unable to manage the risk because they're so high. If you think of that, remember the BP when they had that leak, the risks are just so, the costs associated with that are just so high that South African banks are not able to deal with that. And also their whole procedure. So, for example, when they start, they go into production for like 20 years, and then they only close after 20 years. There's no annual rehabilitation that can be done. There's no. It's just a different method of mining, completely to kind of a terrestrial mining operation. So all of the requirements that we have, which is the annual or the, you know, your annual plan and your and your review after 3 years, it doesn't really suit the industry at all. It doesn't make sense to them or for them. So they would be spending a lot of money just to comply, but not really to have any impact on the risks that are associated with them. So the issues really are around the fact that the requirements for a terrestrial mining operation are not really suited to an oil and gas production, and then the risks and the financial vehicles are also not able to really deal with the issues. So that's really why they're asking for a, and we're not saying that they wouldn't fit in, we need to fit them in, but just maybe under a different clause or in some way different. Thanks.
All right. So we will then proceed like that. So just a recap, some of the issues were fine. These new ones, I think we need to subject them somehow to consultation or engagement with the stakeholders. Let the lawyers talk to each other and tell us whether we can proceed with that. And then there's also an issue of latent, which was initially proposed to be excluded, now to be included. I think that you can also include it as a part of the package to be consulted. Okay? Do you still have more time to take? No, it means we have to finish. Yeah, we're in trouble. No lunch, meaning we must go on and finish at 1. Latest 1:30 is now almost 12:33. Do you think you can finish your part, Mr. Shawla? What's you?
Thanks, Chair. I think on the one environment system, Chair, there are only two clauses. There are four clauses that are affected. It's mainly clause 4E. And excuse me, Chair, I have a flu, so it's my first time. And also clauses 75 to 78. 75 to 78 was mainly dealing with the one environment system in terms of some provisions. And clause 4 is the part that also the division has on the simultaneous submissions of environmental policy. But this one is kind of on mining-related environmental policy. So in terms of the clause 4, we received a comment from AGSA. In the main, they do not support the one environment system. Because they are saying it's unbiased,
and it provides a special dispensation to the mining sector. So they are suggesting that the provision in NEMA that is one environment system should actually be removed from this field. Our response, Chair, is that the mining activities previously were excluded from the scope of the National Environmental Management Act because they were regulated under the NTRBA. Now, in addition to that, we have a situation where you're conducting those mining activities, you also require, besides the approval for the NTRBA, you also require the water use license in terms of the Water Act, and you also require environmental authorization under NEMA, and you may also require, depending on your activity, you also require a waste management license or an air quality management license. And the challenge that we had was that those processes that I've explained for the different licenses or permits, where we have different processes that were applicable to those licenses. And I think that's the anchor basically of the one environment system, because it provides right integration in terms of having one system that will be applicable in terms of the processes to all the different licensing permitting regimes. So if we basically remove this one environment system, now, since the permit operation in December 2014, it will, in our view, provide a disruption to the regulated community because at the moment we are still transitioning from the NTRBA regime to the NEMA regime. RBSA also provided input on clauses 75 and 76. In essence, they are also of the view that an environmental management program approved under the NTRBA cannot be equated to an environmental authorization under NEMA. Our response is that the department agrees in principle that an EMPR is not equal to an environmental authorization. However, this was the only environmental type of authorization with environmental conditions that was previously used under the NTRBA. But remember, under the NTRBA, before the 2008 amendment, any environmental issues were dealt with under the NTRBA. So you had to get an EMP, which basically provides for your action plan on how you are going to mitigate the environmental impacts stemming from your mining activity. And as a result, in 2008, when the one environment system was first conceived, based on the minister's arguments, the NEMA as well as the NTRBA were amended to basically provide for that transition. So this amendment that is currently under the 2014 and the 2008 amendment is similar to the Section 38B amendment that is under the NTRBA Amendment Act of 2008, which basically equates an EMP to an environmental authorization based on the arguments that the minister has been on in 2008 and subsequently 2011. Comments from Center for Environmental Rights. We received a comment on clause 4E on the simultaneous submission of all related authorizations relating to a mining activity. So in essence, they are suggesting that we should indicate, include a new provision under 4E, specifically on subsections 11, 12, and 13, to indicate that in each of these applications where you apply for those authorizations, the applicant must indicate that they will also be requiring a license, for example, for water license, or for waste management license for a public. And I think their argument there is that because they have public participation, they want to know which other licenses the man will be subjected to so that they can provide the comments. And we accept that proposal. Also, Center for Environmental Rights commenting on clause 75 that deals with the transition, 75 paragraph A and B. They are objecting basically to the equating of EMPR to an environmental authorization because their view is that
they are not similar, and they deal with they are meant for different purposes. And they are suggesting, as a result of their comments, that we should, they should not, the EMPR should not be equated to an environmental organization. Instead, it should remain an EMPR, and there should be a proviso added in 75 in the transit arrangement to provide for an 18-month period where the holders of environmental management programs must submit an application for an environmental authorization in terms of NEMA. Our response as a department is that we are not supporting that proposal, as this approach will create a costly administrative burden, as well as for disruption in the sector. Also, if I may add that in the 2008 amendment, as well as the 2014 amendment, the Amendment Act provides for the minister to request, when there's deficiency in the EMPR, for the minister to call for those deficiencies to be rectified within a particular time frame. So there is already a mechanism that the minister can actually deal with any deficiencies that may be that may crop up in the EMPR. Also, a comment from Center for Environmental Rights on clause 76, subsections 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's the same comment that they've indicated above in terms of not equating the EMP and the environmental protection under NEMA. And I think our comments, our response are similar to 75. Chamber of Mines comments, they are commenting on clause 4E. Basically, their comment is around the definition of environmental organization. They are arguing that because the definition of environmental authorization also includes similar authorization as contemplated in the specific Environmental Management Act. So we should actually use environmental authorization instead of referring to licenses or permits or environmental authorization under NEMA. Our response is that if the terminology of environmental as defined will be used in the proposed text, there might be a risk that the intention of the clause might be lost, or there might be a misinterpretation. And the reason why we are using a different terminology is because we want to stick to the wording as provided for example, the Air Quality Act provides for an atmospheric emission license. So we need to license. The Waste Act provides for a waste management license. That's the wording that is used if you want that. And the NEMA provides for environmental authorization. So we want to make sure that there's that understanding that when we refer to a license, we are specific to say waste management license or atmospheric emission license under the Waste Act. Chamber of Mines comment on clauses 75 to 78. These are the clauses that deal with transitional arrangements. They are proposing that instead of having separate transitional arrangements from clauses 75, 76, and 77, we should actually collapse those three clauses into one to provide for one transitional arrangement specifically on the one environment. Our response is that the department agrees in principle that the transitional provision can be comprehensively dealt with under NEMA and the Waste Act, provided that the state will advise and give us some sort of guidance in terms of whether that approach will be achievable. But also we caution that we should be mindful that the transition of the one environment. It's not on this scale. It started in 2008 when the two pieces of legislation were amended, which is the NTRDA as well as NEMA, to give effect to the initial agreement. Also, in 2014, there was the National Environmental Management Laws Amendment Bill Act of 2014, which also provided some transitional arrangements, specifically now linking it with the MPRDA being that it's in parallel. So our concern is that if we merge those transitional residents, we might need some of the important aspects that are contained in the other amendment text. And it might be a new transitional resident that needs careful consideration. So that's basically our question, but subject to the Chief Advisor's advice as well. Chair of my comment on clause 75, paragraph A, that the last line should be clarified to read 1998 and shall begin to be an environmental protection issue in terms of NEMA. Our response is that this amendment is not supported for the reason that the department has already amended the EIA regulations of 2017 to clarify the transition arrangement specifically relating to the mining activity. So if there might be changes, if there are changes on that transition arrangement, we should consider the wording in the EIA regulations because I think it provides more clarity on the transition from EIA. Chairman Rothman comment on clause 75, paragraph B, that the wording should be on section 12, subsection 4, capital A must be clarified to read as follows, that the environmental management plan or program approved in terms of the MPRDA after 8 December 2014 in terms of an application in terms of that act shall be deemed to have been approved in terms of the National Environmental Management Act and shall be deemed to be an environmental protection issue in terms of the National Environmental Management Act. We suggest that I think the comment is aligned to the previous comments, our response, in terms of that we should also consider the EIA regulations wording in looking at that providing that paragraph. Also, the Chamber of Mine indicated that on the same clause that the problem with 12 subsection 4B is that it does not resolve the problem of mining companies with approved EMP and EMPR, which may not specify or may have specified each and every listed activity directly associated with the mining in the same way as the terminology used in the various listing activities. So in essence, they are saying that we should make sure that we cover everyone in terms of the legal and the illegal. And our response is that the intention of the 2008 Amendment Act, as well as the 2014 Amendment, is to only provide to legalize those activities that were approved legally in terms of MPRDA and in terms of NEMA. Any activity that was undertaken illegal is not going to be catered for in the transition arrangement and must be subject to the penalty provided for in NEMA. And that is the intention basically of section 12 paragraph 4B, that whatever that is illegal remains illegal. These are minor suggestions from the Chamber of Mines on clauses 75 to 76, which most of the proposals that they are suggesting we are accepting, except for 76, which we argue that the transition arrangements regarding mining applications approved before or after 8 December under the MPRDA are only those ones that we're pitching for. So any measure in terms of the issues where we collapse the arrangement may create some sort of confusion with respect to that. There's also a minor proposal on clause 76, which we agree with the department. And also on clause 76, that there should be a new clause that reflects the contents of the 2008 amendment, which basically that's the clause that dealt with the transition arrangement relating for EMP acts to be created to environmental response is that the 2008 NEMA amendment dealt with the transition from the MPR regime, which includes the holders of all holder rights under the MPR A, to the NEMA regime based on the Minister's Agreement in 2008. And the 2014 amendments, the NIMLA amendments, was meant to provide some clarity on the 2008 Amendment Act on the one environmental system in order to strengthen it and to give effect to the 21st Minister's Agreement. Also on clause 76, that the wording of clause 76.4 should also be put into subsection 4 of the 2008 amendment, and I think our response is aligned to the previous response that the 2008 amendment that do not contain a section of on 24A, nor does the NIMLA inserted a section of, so in this regard, the NIMLA only contains 24, which provides for that transition and equating an EMP into an environmental authorization. And those proposals on clauses 76, we agree with those proposals. Clause 77, the Chamber is seeking clarity on the wording of this clause, taking into consideration that a waste management license is also an environmental authority. I think we dealt with this one, that we use the terminology that's provided for in the various legislation. So for consistency purposes, we're seeking those the last clause that the Chamber brought, the comment from the Chamber on clause 78 is on clarity regarding the repeal of section 38, 89, 41, 42 of the NPRDA, which is associated with the definition of section 1. These are mainly, these clauses in the NPRDA, 38, 89, 41, and 42, were mainly the clauses that dealt with financial provision. So those clauses, when the MPRDA was repealed, the financial provisions were moved to the National Environmental Management Act to deal specifically with the environmental aspect under NEMA. So that aspect was catered for in the 2008 amendments in our view. So that's our response to the comments from Western Cape governments, I think their comment in the main is on the issue that we have, that the EMPR is not an environmental organization because the two have different roles and functions, and they're different in terms of the objective there. So our response to that is that in principle we agree that an EMPR is not equal to an environmental organization. But however, that was the only type of environmental authorization with environmental condition that was previously used under the NPRDA, and that the current bill, as it stands, is also aligned to section 38B of the 2008 NPRDA amendment, and that is still currently being finalized in Parliament. But also to emphasize that the intention of our transitional arrangement is not to legalize any activity that an authorization was not provided for. I think those are the comments here on the MPRA. These are just extending the transitional arrangement as from MPRA to NEMA under this edition.
Thank you. I see. The formatting is different of the response. You guys do not contend on the approach. Because this one you are able to follow it easier than the previous one. The previous one was I got lost sometimes, but anyway. The the content is fine, but just the structure of presentation. I was out for some time, so I missed some of the things. So when I came back, I was not following quite well. So this one, I'm gonna rely on my colleagues. Yeah, if they have good questions, they are fine. I see everybody is nodding and says the wife is not sure whether to raise or
not to raise their hand. I'm not sure what the world is up there. I was trying to tell you after the meeting by this much, both of the proposals there are indicated and accepted.
So there's not much.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. And Dr. Shavala, maybe we can take the next one. Mark?
Thanks, Chip. We're following a very similar format of taking into consideration the comments, what our response is, and what action we will take in considering the responses. Chair, it's in basically four categories. There were a lot of comments around the definitions, a lot around contaminated lands. Third area is an area of exemption to Part 8, and the last one relates a lot to the previous presentation, which is on the One Environment System. So I think it's good that we link with the previous presentation and take the alignment that's been requested there. So on this slide, Chair, we're basically showing that there's basically comments from five commenters or organizations. The Association of Cementitious Materials and Products, Banking SA, Agri SA, Center for Environmental Rights, and the Chamber of Mines. The comments in three areas: general comments, specific comments on clauses, and some suggestions on amendments. On the first slide, Chair, we talk about the comment from ACMP, Dr. Rama, on the issue around the broad comment around the interpretation of the waste definition, read in conjunction with the inclusion or not the inclusion of the of Schedule 3. Schedule 3 is an issue that relates to the previous presentation, mainly in the context of removing residue stockpiles and deposits from the schedule back into NEMA in terms of the One Environment System, which we have agreed on. And that then brings us back to the issue of whether or not we need the schedule. There's some commenters saying that we need the schedule, others are saying not. Back onto the schedule, the Chair goes back over 4 years ago, when the Chair at the time and the agreement that was taken that sources of waste, aspects relating to what is waste, need to be clearly defined. So while we had a definition of what is waste, there was an agreement that there should be a schedule clearly outlining sources of waste in terms of international best practice, like the European Union and other countries have, that shows the industry or any emerging person or any entrepreneur or anybody wanting to get into the waste space that this is waste and the other is not waste. So we did two things. We provided the definition and we also provided the schedule, just in case people didn't fully understand the interpretation of waste. So we are prescriptive in the schedule about what is waste, and in the definition, we try to limit unnecessary ambiguity or interpretation. So Chair, I'll come back to the link on the schedule, on the specific comment and the suggestion. I want to move over now to, and before I do that, Chair, the comment from the ACMP was really talking a lot about deregulizing, liberating issues around materials that are used for beneficiation and the promotion of the circular economy, which we dealt with a lot at the PAKISA on the waste economy. And so I think a lot of the suggestions are really in the context of making waste and materials more available to be beneficiated and recycled. So in that context, ACMP is supporting the changes and amendments, and I'll get back to the specific comments. Moving on then, Chair, to the Banking Association of South Africa. They made quite a long presentation, and the essence of it really was that they are asking for the financial sector and institutions and banks to be granted exemption from Part 8 of the Waste Act, which deals with remediation and rehabilitation of contaminated land. We've applied our mind to this, Chair, and we've really interrogated some of the content they've submitted. We've also engaged with them, albeit a very limited engagement at the time, and I think it requires some more engagement. And to conclude that in terms of an exemption, we cannot grant financial sector itself only an exemption. There will be lots of other people asking for that. So we've discussed this with them, and we've come to an agreement that some of the suggestions they are making, we will definitely consider, and I'll come to that in a moment. The next slide deals with their concern also about when people buy land that's contaminated, issues of risk that's involved in the what they call security against loans that banks will give for land that may be contaminated. And then it comes back to this matter of due diligence. And we believe that there are more than enough tools available for due diligence investigations. It's a common practice that any investor, any buyer that will engage in any matter of the sale will undertake proper due diligence, whether it's a property, whether it's land, whether it's a business. So due diligence is a matter that banks, buyers, lenders would have to do. So we believe that there's no need then to provide any exemption in terms of that. Moving on the next slide, slide 4 is also this aspect of applying for an exemption, and they're talking about aspects relating to retrospective contamination. The Act is very clear that it provides for retrospective contamination as well as issues of future contamination. So again, the same principle applies. We cannot exempt a specific sector only from the provisions of this part of the Waste Act. So we then come to the specific comments, and I'll take the first one relating to mine residues and stockpiles. It has been covered to some extent by the previous presentation dealing with the One Environment system. The Association of Cementitious Materials and Products, they support the notion that mine residues and stockpiles be moved from the Waste Act into NEMA, and we take that into consideration. At the same time, they recommend, and as it's stipulated there, that we remove the portion dealing with exploration, mining, quarrying, and physical and chemical treatment of minerals, that that part be removed from the schedule if we are going to keep the schedule, or their suggestion is that we remove the schedule completely. And that is the matter we are considering. And they are also representing Business Unity South Africa and its members here in terms of the removal of stockpiles, that is using deposits, and we'll come to also the comments from the Chamber of Mines also supporting that move, and it's really the issue that we have already agreed on in terms of One Environment system. We move then to the specific comments around the definition of waste and the other definitions, and here it's relating to discussions at PAKISA where the objective really is to limit unnecessary environment burden, licenses and all of that that gives that becomes very onerous for companies to start dealing in the recycling space. So here there's the issue around the exclusion regulations. And we just want to say, Chair, that in terms of the progress there, that regulation has really been advanced to quite a level now. It's been finalized by the Minister, and it's going to be ready for publication, for implementation very imminently. So the aspects relating to all the materials that the ACMP has suggested be excluded from the definition of waste are really materials that have now found their way into the exclusion regulations and will be finalized. These relate very specifically to fly ash, synthetic gypsum, and granulated blast furnace slag, which they've asked for. And we've included that. And as such, Chair, these materials, I should call them, once excluded from the definition of waste, will not require licenses anymore. So we've addressed their concern around materials that cease to become waste. And we've also done a lot of work during the PAKISA on all the chemical and physiological properties relating to these particular materials and submissions made from different sectors, as well as looking into the risks of utilizing and using these materials in products and in construction activities going forward. The next slide deals with where ACMP is making a specific request that cementitious products be removed from the requirement of, where they are called waste. And they're asking for a special paragraph to be inserted, which you can see there, relating only to that particular sector. So we've had a look at this, and we believe that, you know, it could be the same for other sectors that would want similar specific provisions drafted for their sectors. And our position on this is that there are more than enough standards, codes, norms and standards for various things that's available under the DPI, the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, under the SABS, under SANS. We have various codes for the use of alternative materials in construction. So I can give an example around ash, it's used in blocks. There is a code for that. And so it goes for a lot of other products. We've engaged with the Green Building Council, Agreement SA, also the NHBRC, CIDD, and other institutions that regulate the construction sector. And the discussion there is that they are more than willing to provide for codes, norms, and standards for the use of alternative materials in products. I've had an engagement with the ACMP and Dr. Ram on this matter, and they agree that they will follow the route of getting codes and standards published under DTI and SABS for the use of their products. The next slide deals with the definitions. They have made comment on the definitions that relate to domestic waste, building waste, and commercial waste. We have looked at this, and it has been accepted in terms of how we define business waste, commercial waste, domestic waste, and these are new definitions that have been included in this amendment that gives more clarity. Moving on, they talk about the use of the words significant and insignificant in the definition of inert waste, and we believe that in terms of the dictionary definition, we are covered in terms of the new definition that we use for inert waste. Lastly, on this slide, they talk about amendments to Section 43 of the Act, where it refers to the use of waste for beneficial use. And they state that our members are of the view that application for waste license for such materials is not necessary, it poses unnecessary cost to business, and so forth. Here again, Chair, they make quite a long discourse around how an EI process itself can exempt them from certain materials. What we are recommending to them that when there are EI processes, the deals, and EIA processes deals with activities, not necessarily materials. they must submit in terms of the scope of the EIA materials, methodology, EMPs, whatever that must cover the use of alternative materials in construction, and in terms of the EIA approval at the time, they then will be approved for the use of that material. But my discussion with them is that they must therefore include in the EIA process exactly what they want to use as alternative materials, and that can easily be accommodated. We move on to Agri-SA. Agri-SA there here talks about what it's saying in terms of clause 69. Agri-SA is opposed to the granting of any decision-making powers in terms of NEMWA to the Minister of Mineral Resources. Again, this is a matter that's dealt with under the One Environment system, and so we therefore do not propose any further changes to the bill in terms of what Agri-SA is requesting. We move on under the specific comments again to the Banking Association, talking about Clause 69 and Section 28, where they talk about lenders requiring exemption from the provisions of the Waste Act relating to remediation of contaminated land. And here again we contend that we are not in a position to grant only that specific sector exemption. We move on to Clause 60, which deals with the issue of the National Contaminated Land Register. You'll recall, Chair, there was quite a discussion on the National Contaminated Land Register being made public. There were suggestions from Banking SA that this be linked to the Deeds Registry. There was a discussion around this with them. We've had a look at and interrogated that within the department and legal, and there appears to be an issue around the alignment of the two acts that deals with how we would provide the land register onto that registry. Our proposal is that we would provide this and make it public under the South African Waste Information Center, SAWS, which is a public available database where the public can access the National Contaminated Land Register. We move on next to the issue around
the current situation that's contaminated land.
Currently it's available on the South African Waste Information System within the department, and people used to write to us to want information, and now we're saying that it will be made public on the South African Waste Information Center, and we are looking at with our lawyers on linking this also to the deeds registry. I am advised, Chair, that there is a little problem with that, which both lawyers are trying to engage on. If that is possible, we don't have a problem with making that register also available on the deeds registry. So we come to the aspect relating to Section 40 of the transfer of contaminated land. Again, Banking SA argues that should a property be contaminated and remediation be required as per the remediation plan, the cost of such remediation needs to be deducted from the security value. Again, the argument here is about buyers, sellers, the issue of how banks take the risk on contaminated land, market value. They want to add another portion onto the market value for the cost of remediation. When you go into Section 40 of the Act, Chair, the Act is very, very clear about the transfer of contaminated sites, where a seller must notify the person who's buying of the fact that the land is contaminated and requires remediation. There's a whole section there that deals with the fact that any buyer and a bank has to be notified. So this matter of how they cost in the risk is really a commercial type of arrangement which we are not totally involved with, except that, you know, we say that land must be rehabilitated and remediated, and we believe that this is very, very clearly communicated in the Act. We also propose, Chair, that that we have a further engagement with Banking SA just to make them aware of all of these provisions and indeed that their concerns have been accommodated. We then move on, Chair, to the Center for Environmental Rights, where they talk about the site assessment reports being submitted together with the remediation plan. Their comments are duly accepted. They made a case where they use a clause under the proposed amendments right at the bottom of the slide there. Proposed amendments 36A, 1A, sorry, where they say instead of saying where the minister must cause a site assessment to be conducted, they want that to place where the minister must require a site assessment to be conducted, and we accept that change. We also accept what they're saying about a report must be submitted. We accept that and we will be making that change as well. We then go into the area of what they talk about, the timeframes where site remediations, etc., must be conducted. In the presentation at the hearings, Chair, they use a specific example relating to the matter of ArcelorMittal. Here again, we contend that, you know, there are different site-specific issues that we have to deal with at different sites. So you have a site like this, which is huge, in over 30, 40 hectares, requiring a huge amount of time for scientists to fully understand the impact and the extent of pollution. And it takes a long time, so 90 days to conclude a study will never be possible with a site as huge as that. In that case, it took about 24 months for us to fully understand what was happening there. So it has to be on a case-by-case basis, and it's really how the team that review the assessment report to make the conclusions around issuing of the remediation order, and it's on a case-by-case basis. Again, they talk about, in the next slide, the requirement for a site assessment. We accept that.
How many left
are you left? We just got about 3 or 4 left.
Yeah.
I think we're done. So, Chair, the next slide really is about the site assessment report, the issue of contaminated land. We accept the last slide. Where the Center for Environmental Rights, also the Chamber of Mines and the Banking, they talk about changing the wording from investigation areas to contamination areas, and we accept that on slide 15. The word investigation area to be replaced with contamination area. We accept that, and we're going to be going forward with that. Chair, I'll move on to slide then 22, and sorry, just before that, just to talk about slide 10.
Oh, yeah, this slide, I don't count it.
No, Chair, it's on the same thing. It's let me just go through quickly then. Slide 14 deals with the report for a site assessment report must be submitted with a plan. We accept that. Slide 15 talks about this investigation area to be called contamination areas. We accept that. Slide 16 also refers to the making public these contamination areas and making public the register. And as I agreed to earlier, we accept that. Slide 17 also the proposal about policy relating to mining contaminated areas. Now here it has to be dealt with the new regime under the One Environment System, where DMR will have the data relating to mining areas that's contaminated. Slide 18 talks about where they ask us a proposal to remove the word significantly from section 36. I think that's a useful suggestion, and we definitely will consider the removal of the word significant. Slide 19. I've dealt with previously from the Center of Environmental Rights, section 40, it says no person may transfer contaminated land. and we believe that no changes needed on this section, and the section is very clear about the requirements for transfer of contaminated land. Slide 20 refers to the structure of the board under the Bureau and the amendments to be made there. The request from the Chamber is really in the context of us, whoever is going to be representing directors in the board, is that there must be a broad field of expertise in waste management, and a suggestion, proposal from the Chamber of Mines, specifically somebody with expertise in mining to be on the board of the Bureau. And that we will consider as well. Chair, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. McQuena, who's really going to deal with very quickly the aspects relating to the mining aspects that's going to be transferred to the One Environment System and the DMR.
Okay. If you agree. It's already been checked out. Mr. McQuena,
thank you very much. Just to continue, most of the slides here are yesterday in a presentation on One Environment System. But we do note the comments on the organization relating to the board of the Waste Bureau. It's safe to say that in as far as the requirements for the Waste Bureau are aligned with other requirements for the other DR entities. On slide 22, again here is after the other presentation on the management system, where we need to do alignment because of the wording that is also proposed by the Chamber that would be consistent in the organizations that we name. For example, say from the state, we do that consistently, so an amendment that we need that. Again, that comment on Schedule 3, which is also supported by the Business Unity South Africa, here it introduces more the amendments as the Business Intervention Allowance. So we are refining the Schedule 3 or the Act when it comes to that part. Section 75 to 78 is also transitional provisions which will align with NEMA, but also details as per the earlier presentation on One Environment System. Again, here, Chamber of Mines, their submission on the EMP, EMPR is related to One Environment System. What brings the waste part closer to this in that discussion is the waste licensing system as well as the residue deposit pass, which in the 2014 amendment has come under the ambit of the Waste Act. So the discussion on those, and most of those are contained in the Schedule 3. So it's a proposal to migrate it from the Waste Act to NEMA. On level 76, I think it's after the earlier discussion and presentation, we look at those minor amendments to avoid or to ensure that there's no contradiction. Chamber of Mines in this area, also environmental organizations, while we consider their comments and make the necessary amendments, so they send the certification of the wording that says anything done under Section 78.1. Again, the revision of Schedule 3 is proposed, with which the first class in the stated complete undoing of Schedule 3. I think the last part is on gender for a commission for gender equity, with the proposal again similar to the one by the Chamber of Mines. Here the commission is requesting consideration, incorporation of consideration of gender requirements for the board of the Waste Bureau. And there's already provisions in the bill that talks to that alignment as per the other provisions in the other department entities. So equitable gender representation to be considered as part of the nomination process. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. As you can see, we're in a bit of a hurry because we've just been asked to vacate so that they can swiftly before the next meeting. So we take this. I don't know whether it's a quick question.
So it's not so that I'm not for this. I see in terms of gender, we refer to gender equality and or gender equality. And in terms of law, the two refer to two different things. So we need to be clear when we go up to in the next job, whether we're talking gender equity or gender equality.
Okay. No, I guess the submission is that equity, there must be 50-50. That's a pitch, isn't it? So, I guess there's some questions. I needed to understand what is the submission by the Chamber of Mines about the consultation on the waste law of the board. That there must be somebody from mining, the Minister of Minerals, DMR must be. I didn't pick up what was the comment quickly. Do you know what your comment is on the request?
Thanks, Chair. Oh, we are proposing that we align with the other nomination processes for the board members in the department for nomination of the board
for the other NGO. No, it's okay. I think we're done. Please, we dealt with integrated environmental management and financial provisions, one environmental system, waste act. So we're left with air quality management, biodiversity, compliance and enforcement. So I guess when you come back next week, Tuesday, we will then deal with that. Probably we might have to start early and then go through them as quick as you can. But unless if there's any other question, we can then adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much for the meeting, for the responses. I guess the same that we have dealt with for the financial provision is applicable to the waste. If there are issues in one or environmental system that needs to be better consulted on, we can do that.
Do you bring a chat of the names of the
No, they're all from the Department of Environment. So yeah, they're all from different officials.
Yeah.
At the very first person to present, I think.
Yes. The one is right.
From DIA, so they'd all be,
they're all the
DEA officials, yeah.
Okay.
But there was what, there was Mr. Nkwema, there was this Indian guy with Mark, but I don't know what his name is.
Was it Mark or Bisham?
Oh, maybe Bisham.
Yeah.
But we need to actually go and get the one environmental system thing.
Oh yeah, the exact one.
That one we don't have.